We're very fortunate today. We're going to talk to one of the world's favorite heroes. We're going to talk to the Man of Steel, Superman. Of course, as you all know, the Man of Steel is in reality Clark Kent. Do you mind if I call you Clark?
Not at all. I'm mild-mannered.
When did you first find out that you were Superman?
When I was just a little boy. I used to get ready for bed at night. I'd take off all my clothes and fly away. I'd fly down to Cincinnati, St. Louis. One time I flew down to Dayton. Folks had to come down and get me. It took them 2 days by bus.
That's rough.
Yeah.
Could you tell us about one of your experiences in saving someone?
Well, yes. One time I was up in a building and I saw a woman down on the sidewalk. She was just about ready to get hit on the head with a big safe. So I jumped out of the 12-story window.
Yeah, what happened?
Well, I broke both my arms and my leg, and I hurt my hip real bad. And then there was this other time I saw a guy out in the Hudson River drowning.
Yeah.
So I jumped off the old bridge, jumped in and got him, and just at that time a steamboat was coming towards me.
Yeah.
I put up my hands, stopped that boat.
Gee, what happened?
I broke my other leg and re-hurt my hip and bruised my nose a lot.
Perhaps you could give us some sample of your remarkable strength. Do you still have to retain that remarkable strength today?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I'll tell you what, I could lift you up with one hand.
Sure, yeah.
All right. Here, let me just...
Okay.
Let me just try and lift you.
Go right ahead.
Now, let me just...
Oh, wait a minute. Would it help if I took off my shoes?
No, that's all right. Just leave me. I can get it. Don't worry. Don't push me. I can... Could you take the change out of your pockets? Hey,
well,
I could have had it, you know.
Yeah, I know, but just all right. I was wondering, too, if you could still fly.
Well, yeah, but just on weekends around the living room. A little bit. Take a little dip around the couch.
Tell me, how is Lois Lane?
She broke up.
Oh, you don't see her anymore?
No, she broke up.
Oh, I don't understand.
Well, we used to have this little act. We'd work out at fairs in the summertime, get a little extra money. Had a 200-foot tower, and she'd jump off it, and I'd catch her. And this one summer, she jumped off, and I missed her, so she broke up. Yeah.
Are you still able to do any of your remarkable tricks?
Well, sure, yeah. I still have all my strength and everything. As a matter of fact, I've got a gun right here. If you'd like to just kind of take a shot at me. It's only a .22, but just point it right at my chest and let me have it. Sure, just go right ahead. Just point it right at the old chest and I'll show you. Go ahead.
Just shoot it.
Go right ahead.
Right in the center of your chest.
Right.
Superman? Superman? Oh, my goodness. Gee. I got him right in the ass. You know, I guess there isn't a man, a woman, or a child alive today who isn't familiar with the famous jungle trio, Tarzan, Jane, and Boy. We found out they still live a quiet life in the jungle that they know and love. And tonight it's quite a thrill for me to be here because we're going to be talking to a member of the original Tarzan family. And I know you'll all recognize him. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to have you meet Tarzan's original son, Boy. Boy, mean man. We talk. How you say, welcome. You welcome.
You feel me. All right.
Oh, you speak English?
Yes, I do. Yes, I, do you?
Yeah, yes.
I thought we were going to have a language barrier. There.
Boy, was there anybody else in the family? We were only familiar with you through your movies. I was just wondering if there was.
Well, yes, Tarzan and Jane had a little girl.
Oh, what was her name?
A girl.
I understand you and Tarzan and Jane still live right here in the jungle.
Well, that's correct, yes. We still make our home here. We live in a little place called Alligator Jaw Swamp.
Well, I'll bet that's an adventure in itself. What with the man-eating alligators lurking in the dark jungle waters? Is that right?
Well, I don't know about that. It's a trailer park. We got lights and everything, water.
I see. Well, as we all know, it's been some time since Hollywood discovered your family. Now, how old are you now, man?
Well, I'm 38, and Tarzan is 81, and Felica is 72.
Felica?
Yes, that's correct. Well, you didn't know her as Felica. You probably knew her as Jane, you see, but her real name was Felica. Of course, when the movie people came in, they had to change her name, of course.
I don't really know why. Felica, it's kind of a romantic name.
Well, not really. You see, in Jungle Talk, Felica means Trail of the Buffalo. And if you've ever been on a trail of a buffalo after a jungle rain...
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, well, the steam would take the crease right out of your pants.
You know, I can't help wondering, did the jungle animals really understand what Tarzan was saying?
No, they never knew what he was saying, no.
Well, I don't understand. In the movies, whenever he gave that yell, you know, they'd come right to him.
Yeah, well, they came mostly out of curiosity. I mean, you take a guy out there beating his chest in his underwear, I mean, you're going to raise a crowd, I don't care where you are.
Yeah, but they all seemed to, he'd go, or something, you know, and in their language it appeared, and they would all go off as though they knew where they were going and what they were
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, well, they went off, usually, because he was standing in the felica. And like I say, you know, you get a jungle rain in that felica.
I know. Yeah.
You been on one?
No, I'll just take your word for it. Tarzan was a friend of the animals, though, wasn't he?
That's correct. Tarzan never killed any of the jungle animals. That's mm-hmm. how he got his famous Tarzan yell.
Oh, how was that?
Well, when the movie people came in, they insisted that he wear an animal skin, and so that's how he got the yell.
Well, how did he get the yell? I missed the point there somewhere.
Well, I mean, do you ever get up in the morning, try and put a live puma on?
If Tarzan didn't kill any animals...
That's right.
Without killing them, what did he eat now?
Well, he ate what his best friends ate. You see, the pumas were his best friends, so he ate what they ate. Peas.
Puma peas?
That's right. Quite a sight to see the pumas down by the pond eating puma peas from the puma pea pods. Tarzan eating the pods from the puma peas down by the pond with the pumas are eating with the paws. Of course, Jane just ate jaguar jelly. You want to know how that's made?
Jaguar jelly? No, it's not necessary.
Well, you take the jaw of jaguar and a jigger of jungle juice and you just kind of mix it all.
Just forget that.
You don't? No. Now, I just ate bunco berry butter myself. Now, you used to get about 4 berries to a bunco.
Well, I'm not interested in that.
We sell it at the gift shop. I don't know if you don't care.
Swell. Do you have any advice, boy, for young jungle boys, perhaps?
Well, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. My advice is swing. And wash your loincloth twice a week.
There's no day filled with quite as much excitement as the day a woman becomes a mother. And there are many things that the expectant mother should take into consideration, certainly before that happy day. And to give you an idea of what to expect and how to prepare for the big day, we've asked an expert on the subject to be with us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Dag Herford. How long have you been a doctor, Mr. Herford?
Doctor? Oh, graduated in 52... So this is, let me jot that down, see, there, be right there. Can you read that?
Looks like 80.
80, yeah. Good, I've been a doctor for 80 years. No, wait a minute, that's not right either. It looks like an 80. Let me run this down to the pharmacy and see if they can read this.
Never mind, Doctor, but no. I guess you're qualified to speak on the subject since you have children of your own.
Yes.
How many do you have?
I have 3.
3? Well, what are they?
A boy and a girl.
I don't understand. You should either have 2 boys and a girl or 2 girls and a boy.
Well, we'll see.
Dr. Herbert, when an expectant mother comes to you, what's the first thing you tell her?
Well, the first thing I tell her is my feet.
Yeah, and then what do you do?
But then I try and revive her. They go right out on you.
They're pretty expensive.
Oh, yes. Well, you got to consider, I go to school, you know, for 8 years.
Yeah.
It takes a long time to learn Latin, you know.
Well, suppose Mrs. Jones came to you, right? And Mrs. Right. Jones is going to have a baby.
Right.
What do you say to her?
Mrs. Jones, you're going to have a baby. I'd come right in there with it. I could tell her in Latin. I've had 8 years, you know. Infanto, magi.
Well,
yeah.
What's the most important asset a doctor can offer a patient?
Well, I think confidence. You see, this is what the mother is looking for, and this is why we take so many speech courses in college. We try to build up the person's confidence by just being able to talk on any subject whatsoever, and that way they have confidence in us.
Well, that's an important factor. I wonder if perhaps you could demonstrate your ability.
Oh, sure. Go right ahead. I'll tell you what, you just give me any subject, and I'll just... kind of speak on it and show you what I mean. Just
okay.
Any subject.
Well, let's take medicine.
All right, fine. Fine, that'll be good. All right. Medicine. medicine. Medicine, part one.
Perhaps I took you a bit off your guard. Could we change the subject, maybe to life?
Oh, well, sure, life, if you want. Well, yeah, that would be a little easier. Yeah, it encompasses. Well, life... life? Medicine.
Forget it.
Forget it, part one.
No. Dr. Hereford, I wonder if perhaps you could give some basic facts about the mother's progress up to the time of birth.
Oh, well, sure. I think that's the most important part. Now, let's just jot down, say, for instance, a few figures. All right, now, the expectant mother is going to be pregnant for 11 months.
Yeah.
let's just jot that down.
Doctor?
We'll have a little basic to start with.
Doctor, excuse me.
Yes.
But I realize you're a doctor. I honestly believe that it is 9 months.
What?
Mount pregnancy is a 9-month period. I'm almost sure.
It is?
Yes, I'm positive,
you're
doctor.
You're sure about that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me just a moment. Just be with you in a minute. Hello, Mrs. Rumbaugh? How are you? This is Dr. Hereford. Yeah, well, I know, a guy just told me. Boy, is she ever mad. Well, we were just tossing around a few figures here ourselves. Yeah. Well, the way I had it figured, you should be in your 10th month. You did? You did already. Little boy. Oh. Well, I bet you were surprised. Yeah. Where did you... On the bowling alley. Well, now, isn't that something? Boy, I bet they'll always remember Alley 3, huh? Yeah, well, look, Mrs. Rumbaugh, I don't see any sense you coming in for the final examination then. Just, hello. Oh, boy.
Well, Dr. Hereford, could we continue? Some of the more basic...
Not right now. I got a lot of calls to make.
As we all know, everybody is using computer cards, the gas company, the phone company, department stores. I've found out that the card has a new use. It can be a matchmaker. They now have a computer that can select a perfect mate for you by the use of these cards. And the man who knows everything about this new machine is Dag Hereford. So now let's go into the mating center and we'll talk to him. Mr. Hereford?
How tall would you like her?
No, I don't want a date. I just want to find out a little bit about your job.
Oh, well, we got them all sizes.
No, thanks.
Short one for the road, perhaps? Just no.
No, Mr. Hereford. I just wanted to ask you a few questions. What is your title here at the mating center?
I'm the sweetheart master.
Mr. Hereford, I understand that it's your job to match people with the hopes that someday they might marry. Now, I imagine that's quite a responsibility.
Boy, I bet that is.
Look, Mr. Hereford, what I would like to do is explain to the people how this machine works.
Oh, well, don't let me interrupt you. You're doing a real good job. Right ahead.
No, you got it wrong. I want you to tell them.
Oh, you do? Oh, well, I could. I'm qualified, you know. Yeah.
Well, I can tell.
Yeah.
Now, suppose a girl comes to you, and she wants a date.
Oh, well, she's out of luck. I'm married.
No, she wants the machine to find her a date.
Oh, she does? Oh, well, that'd be good. First of all, we'd have to find out some vital statistics about her.
Uh-huh. Well, say she's 24.
24? All right. Any other measurements?
Well, that's not a measurement. I mean, that's her age.
Oh, her age. Oh, 24. Yeah, oh. I thought that was her height. Boy, she'd be kind of a little one, wouldn't she? Well, 2 feet tall.
Well, yeah. Okay, now, well, I'll fill it in. All right. Say she has brown hair, blue eyes, likes sports, and put down 34, 22, 34.
34, 22, 34, and what street is that on?
Mr. Hereford, could you just show us how the machine works?
Oh, well, sure, it's right here. Now, see, this machine, the idea of this machine is to select a perfect mate for a person wanting a perfect mate from this machine.
Uh-huh.
So,
how do you get the information in there?
Well, you're probably asking yourself, how do we get the information in there?
Yes.
You are? Well, why don't I tell you? Let's press on. Well, first of all, what we do is put down the vital statistics on this card, and then we feed it into the machine.
Well, could we see that? Could you do that?
Well, sure. Sure. Lucky for you, it's feeding time. We're just... Now, we take this card, and we put the card into slot A. Now, we turn on the machine, and the card will be running through the machine, and it will come out slot B and have the perfect partner for the mate.
Good. Could we see the card in slot B?
Well, not right now.
Oh, why not?
Oh, I got my hand caught in slot A. Well, now, here's a card from slot B, if you like
it. No, what does it say? You just tell me.
It says, keep your hand out of slot A. That's
Well, Mr. Herford, it certainly has been interesting. And before I go, I was wondering if any of these dates the machine picks up leads to marriage.
Oh, sure. As a matter of fact, we have a fellow right now, Mr. Morris, who has so much confidence in the machine that he's going to marry the girl sight unseen that the machine picked for him.
Oh?
Yes.
Is this her card?
That's her card right there. Yeah. Matter of fact, he should be right down at the church right now, Mr. Morris.
Just a moment. Is this the person that he is supposed to marry,
that's
Mr.
Right.
Morris?
Yes. They should be at the church right now.
Yeah, well, I hate to say this, but according to this card here, his bride is supposed to be a Mr. Thompson.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it'll work out. They're the same religion. You can see right there in the... oh, boy. Yeah. Well, you know what we call this?
Oh.
We call this a mistake. Just a minute. Let me just make a call here. hello, Happydale Church. Yes. Is there a Mr. Morris there, please? Oh, Mr. Morris. Yes. This is the sweetheart master. No, I'm not trying to be funny. Yeah. Well, I know. We just saw that little bit. Well, I don't think it's all our fault. Well, you should have known when you printed up the invitations. Yeah. Well, I think Clifford's a funny name for a bride. Yeah. Well, sure. Well, no, we'll clarify the whole thing right here at the center. Yeah. Right. Okay. Oh, say, Mr. Morris... we're wondering if you could do us a favor, just to kind of bring our files up to date. Can we have a picture of you and Mr. Thompson cutting the wedding cake? Hello? Hello?
Tonight, we're going to be talking to one of the country's leading race drivers and one of the real daredevils of the road, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dag Herford. Mr. Herford, I understand that you and your driving partner just completed the Noble Gas cross-country race from New York to Los Angeles.
That's correct. We just got in today.
Well, I imagine driving cross-country like that is quite a grueling task. Yes. How long did it take you?
It took us a year and a half.
A year and a half to drive cross-country? Well, that's unbelievable.
Well, you have to remember, we are driving day and night.
I understand that you are also an outstanding sports car driver. Now, I imagine accelerating to speeds of 150 miles an hour, that must be pretty dangerous. What actually is the biggest safety factor in a situation like that?
Well, you're right. It's dangerous, all right. But I think the key word here is alert.
Alert.
See, this is what you have to be. Every muscle toned to perfection, because you're within inches of causing a fatal accident at any given time. So if you're alert, maintain your five senses well, and I think you'll be all right.
Yeah, you really have to be sharp, in other words. Just... has to come to you immediately, almost like two and two. And, of course, that could apply to everyday driving, too. Keeping your mind active and knowing...
Four.
What?
Four.
Four what?
Well, four. Two and two. Four. See, this is how you keep alert. You, even in conversation, you
just
can jump in.
Jump right in there.
Sure.
I was wondering, traveling at those speeds, have you ever rolled over or, you know...
Pardon?
Rolled over. Have you ever rolled over? Roll over. Roll over.
Well, if you think it'd be interesting. Say, on second thought, could I just sit up and beg? I got a bad knee.
No. I mean, have you ever rolled over in a race?
Oh,
with
a car? Oh, yes. Sure. As a matter of fact, I've rolled over in my last 12 races.
Really?
That's right.
Smash them all up?
Well, yeah, sure.
Well, what do your mechanics say?
They say, he's rolling over again.
Well, there must be some reason to that. Have they improved your car?
Well, yes, they have. Yeah, they redesigned the car.
Oh, they made it closer to the ground, lower center of gravity, so you wouldn't run on the turns.
No, they made it rounder. See, she really rolls now. Oh, she rolls real good, yeah. I got a feeling they'd like to see me roll. But, yeah.
What race are you preparing for now?
Well, we're preparing now for the Indianapolis 500. Mm-hmm. We'll be down there in February racing.
Yeah, but the Memorial Day race is the 500, and that's just coming right up this
Yeah,
weekend.
Well, we don't go down there on Memorial Day. We go in February, see, for the race. You get down there on Memorial Day, it's too crowded. You wouldn't believe it. There's cars going around there over 100 miles an hour. Yeah, you don't have as much competition in February, and gives you a chance to get the bugs out of the car. You know what I mean.
Have you ever won any races?
Well, let me see now. I came pretty close in the Daytona 300 just last month.
Oh.
I was leading by 6 laps. We had
really?
1 lap to go, and I pulled in for a pit stop and a tire change, and took them an hour and a half, so I ended up last.
You only had 1 lap to go, and you went in for a pit stop?
That's right.
And you ended up last. I don't understand that. Today, they change a tire in 20, 30 seconds at the most.
Yeah, right. Well, I got in the wrong pit, see. I pulled in, the guys took my tire off, went up on the hill laughing at me. They're up there smoking, drinking gas, you know. It's a rough crew.
What was the biggest race you were ever in?
Well, I was in the Grand Prix, and that's a pretty big race, you know. First
sure,
prize,
yeah.
75,000.
Mm-hmm.
Second prize, 50,000, on down. So
fantastic.
Big race, real big race.
Where did you finish?
Well, I was in there. I was in there.
Well, what'd you win?
I won a lube job.
How does your wife feel about you being a sports car?
Well, she doesn't feel too badly about it. As a matter of fact, she races even with me once in a while, but I don't know, it bugs her.
She doesn't like it?
Well, no, it bugs her. She doesn't have a windshield on her side. You know, I mean, she gets those moths up her nose and everything. You know?
A moth up your nose is no fun.
You aren't kidding.
I wonder if we could see your car. Would it be possible to look at
it? Well, I couldn't bring it in here. The car's a little big. I'll tell you what I could do, though. I got her right outside. I could go out and start her up, and you could at least hear the engine roar up, and I could drive off in her.
Oh, great. We'd enjoy that, wouldn't we? Thank you very much.
All right, I'll go out and get her.
We'll be interested to hear that. In just a moment, he'll be starting up the 650-horsepower machine. We'll get a chance to hear it. And there he is now. Any moment. Yeah. Listen to that burst of power. Well, there he goes. It was very nice of Mr. Herford to come down here today and speak with us and tell us some of the background of being a race car guy. What's the matter, Mr. Herford?
Oh, I keep forgetting to get in it.
If we could find a way to ensure peace throughout the world and abolish the threat of war. Well, there is a small country that has found this secret to peace. It's the small European country of Parma. Tonight we are going to talk to the man who governs this peaceful nation, Mr. Dag Herford. Hello, Mr. Herford.
Tunic.
Tunic?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Hello in your country?
No, that means tunic. You're standing on my tunic.
I'm sorry, Mr.
That's
Herbert.
Quite all right.
Now, I understand that you are King Anderson's brother. In other words, you're really a prince.
Well, thank you. You're not bad yourself.
Mr. Herbert, in the last 300 years, there have been many major conflicts in the world. Now, how do you account for the fact that Parma was not engaged in any of these wars?
Well, nobody asked us. A lot of guys just sat around and read magazines.
Do you have an army?
Yes, we do. As a matter of fact, we have a very effective army. We have 3,000 women in the army. They're all privates. Mm-hmm. And we have 11 men.
3,000 women are privates? Well, what are the men?
They're pretty happy. A lot of them spend their leave time right in the barracks. Usually have lights out early.
Do you have an Air Force?
Yes, we do. We have a Royal Parma Air Force. We have 300 members of the Royal Parma Air Force.
Well, I was told that you didn't have any planes in Parma.
Well, we don't. But don't tell the cadets. They've already rented the hall for the spring formal. You know.
Well, how, how do you teach them to fly?
Pardon?
I say, how do you teach them to fly if you don't have any airplanes?
Well, we have a tower. It's about 100 foot high, and we send all the cadets up on this tower, and we strap wings to their arms, and then they jump off the tower.
Well, where do they land?
In a big pile down at the bottom of the tower.
What in the world does that teach them?
Well, it teaches them not to jump off that tower. Kind of stupid.
Do you have a navy?
No, but we have 8 soldiers that can float. They can swim if they have to. Bayonets in their teeth. It's going right in there.
What kind of weapons do you have?
Well, here's our most effective weapon. Perhaps you'd like to see this. This is what we call our gun.
It looks like a plain rock to me. How does it work?
Well, what you do is when you see the enemy coming, you take this gun and you throw it at him and you yell bang. Quite effective. We're working on a new one now. It's the same thing, only with a silencer.
How does that new one work?
Well, it works the same way, only you don't yell bang. Just yell snart.
Well, thank you for visiting with us, Mr. Herford. And before you go, would you have a message for the other countries of the world? Something that might help them live in peace, as your country has done?
Oh, well, yes, I do. As a matter of fact, we have a little folk song we sing here in Parma that I think has helped to hold peace here in our little country. Wouldn't mind. I could sing it for you.
Sure, you go right ahead, sir.
Well, it goes something like this.
Man has fought to protect his home. Man has fought to protect his women. Man has fought to protect his country and his rights. Fighting, 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 fighting. To have less fighting in the world, we've got to stop fighting so much.
Well, that stinks. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to present the warden of the Rocky River Honor Farm, Mr. Dag. Mr. Herbert, I understand there are no bars or fences at Rocky River Honor Farm, and the killer and thieves are merely on their honor to stay on the grounds. Now, how did it feel to wake up this morning and just find yourself face to face with those 30 hardened criminals?
Well, there were only 9 this morning.
9? I thought there were 30.
Yeah, well, good riddance, bad rubbish, I say.
You mean 21 men escaped last night?
Well, we don't like to say escaped. We just say, they're away.
That's a little frightening. The killer's on the loose. Does this happen often?
Well, just since we took the fences down. See, there's nothing to keep them here, you know.
Tell me, is there any chance of getting them back?
Well, gee, I hope so. I got 40 acres of winter wheat to get in. This will be the 3rd year in a row that I've done it myself.
What facilities do you have for the men here at Rocky River?
Well, we have quite a few facilities for the men. We have 130 acres that they farm, and 40 head of cattle, and we have the handicraft shop and the gunsmith shop.
A gunsmith shop?
Yeah. Oh, now, don't get me wrong. See, they voted to put that in while I was on vacation. See, they just repair guns here.
Repair them? Well, where do they get the guns?
They're making them in handicraft.
How long have you been the warden here at Rocky River?
Oh, boy, let's see. I've been here 11 years now. I took over right after Warden Riley was shot.
Shot? Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. One of the killers killed him, huh?
No, he wasn't shot. He was shot.
I don't understand.
Well, he was 94 years old. He was shot. Guy can't swing forever, you know. I mean, of course, I was kind of happy. Actually, it's getting to be kind of embarrassing around the old prison here.
Oh, how was that?
Well, you see, Warden Riley never believed in carrying a real gun out among the men, so he had a little wooden gun he had carved and used to carry that out among the men. Mm-hmm. And then one day they found out it was wooden, so they took it away from him and burned it.
Well, that is embarrassing.
Yeah, well, that wasn't the worst part. Right after that, they decided to pull a prison break.
Yeah.
Guys running down the street. There's old Warden Riley running after him, yelling bang, bang, and throwing ashes at him.
Tell me, Mr. Herford, do you mingle with the men?
Yes, I do. Of course, some wardens are afraid to mingle with the men, but not me. I always carry my secret camera with me.
Oh, What does that look like?
Well, here it is right here. Actually, it looks like an ordinary 50-cent piece, you see, but it's a secret camera. It can develop prints right on the spot in case anything goes wrong. I have evidence right here in this little camera.
That is something. Could we see how that works, maybe?
Well, sure. I could take a little picture of you, and perhaps you could see how it works. Now, you just look right into the eagle's eye there.
All right.
That's a lens. Now, just hold it still now. We just...
wet my lips?
Oh, boy. Well, it's an ordinary 50-cent piece. Oh, boy, I guess I gave a waitress camera for a tip.
Well, Mr. Hervin, I want to thank you, and I certainly must say that I think you are a brave man to face these convicts.
Well, actually, it's really that I came here to Rocky River, and I set a pretty tough policy. When I first came here, I'm Mr. Tough. These men know it, and... that's the way it's going to be. Oh, excuse me, there's the phone. Just a moment. Hello? Yes, sir. Warden Herford here. Who? Put him on. Killer? Yeah. No, I'm sorry, Killer. No, sir. No, sir. Set for 9 o'clock. Nope. Governor can't help you now. No, I'm sorry. All that stuff. Goodbye.
Yeah, well, what was that? Who was that?
Kind of an unpleasant task, one of the convicts.
Oh. Well, you should have been on your get-tough policy here at Rocky River. What was it he wanted?
He wanted to know what time I was going to bring him his breakfast.
We think of baseball. We think it's a game. But it's more than that. There are detailed operations involved in bringing our national pastime to us. And one of these important operations happens to be the scheduling of teams' arrival and departure dates. Now, the man who is in charge of seeing that the team gets where it's going on time and leaves on time is called the team coordinator. And we're going to be talking with the team coordinator for the Cleveland Indians, Mr. Dag Herford. Mr. Herford, how long have you been with the Cleveland Indians?
Oh, boy, with them. Let's see. Well, that'd be 7 years, came in the 1916, K1, and B4, be 16 now. I've been with them 1955 years. No, wait. No, I'm sorry. I've been with them since 1955.
Yeah, and you're responsible for the scheduling of all the players on away games, right?
That's right.
Mr. Herbert, how many players do you carry on an away game?
Oh, boy, players on an away game. Well, just a minute, I have a picture of them here. Let's see, on an away game, we'd carry three girls and a dog.
Three girls and a dog?
Wait. I'm sorry, that's my family. I should take that picture off the desk, I suppose. Let's see. Oh, here it is. Here's the team picture. Now, let's see, we have 10 men in a row, be five rows, so that would be 5, 10, 16. Carry one, that'd be 74 men. We picked up a few this year.
Mr. Herbert, suppose you were bringing that team, right, back from Detroit. Now, how would you do that? Detroit.
Detroit.
Right.
All right, Detroit. Let's see. That's in the States. Now, let me see. Now, we'd want to get out of there, say, the game's over at 5:10, so we'd want to get out of there by, say, 6:35. So 6:35, 5:10, 74 men would be 9-6, carry one would be 8, which would be just about 2 minutes a man.
Two minutes a man.
We want to look up an airplane schedule on that, so we look up Detroit, D-E, D-E-T, D-E-T-R, Detroit,
Perhaps you could explain the 2 minutes a man.
D-E-T-R, Detroit. And here we are, Detroit. Now, Michigan, M-I.
I'm sure the folks would be interested.
Here we are, Detroit, Michigan.
The 2 minutes a man, Mr. Herford, could you explain that at all? It's confusing.
No, we can't get a plane out of there. So let's let's check our bus schedule on this. Now, bus, B. B-B-B-U-S. Bus, here we are. Boy, bus. Okay, see, now we get a bus out of there, 6:40. Yeah, get the bus out of there, 6:40. Now, we got 74 men, so we take two buses. 73 in one bus and one in the other.
One in one bus, Mr. Herford?
That's correct, yes. Mm-hmm. Say, you know, Detroit's darn close. I bet they could get on the turnpike and hitchhike. Carry their own equipment.
Mr. Herford, I was wondering, do you ordinarily travel with the team?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, mm-hmm. I'm always with the team.
Yeah. Where is the team now?
They're in Pittsburgh. Boy, I could have made that one, too. It's close. That's the third game this week I missed.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, how do you get to work?
Oh, how do I get to work? Yeah. Well, I take a train.
A train?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which one? One of the, probably the rapid, huh?
No. Let me see. Train. T. T. Train, local train.
It just kind of gives you an idea of train, some of the problems of a baseball coordinator. Train, a busy day in the life of Mr.
You know what? I wouldn't have to take train.
Oh?
No, I drove today.
You know, there are a few of us who realize that there are other countries besides the U.S. and Russia and France and so on that are also in the race for space. Now, I imagine, for instance, that a few of us realize that Switzerland has entered the race. And it was just last month, as a matter of fact, that Switzerland launched its first astronaut. And he's our guest tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, the first Swiss astronaut, Dag Herford. Mr. Herford, what are the qualifications for becoming a Swiss astronaut? How were you selected, I mean?
Well, I was number 37.
Number 37. I don't understand that.
Well, I was in line in a meat market to be waited on. And a guy came in, a Swiss guy, and he said, we're going to start a space program. So he took 30 through 37 in line.
Well, that seems like a very strange way to do things.
Well, that's what I thought, too, you know. But 38 said, gee, go ahead, you know. All you got to lose, your place in line, you know.
Well, selecting at random like that, what kind of people did you get?
Well, we got some pretty good people, surprisingly. We got six guys, and we got an old lady who was returning a pot roast. She worked out real well.
I understand your first rocket was much smaller than ours.
Oh, yes. Our first rocket was just about a foot long.
Well, that was small.
Yes.
Was it a success?
Well, no. Unfortunately, when they went to launch it, it fell off the launching pad and hit a photographer in the knee. One of the guys ran out and stepped on it and crushed it right there. We were pretty happy that nobody was in it.
Was that the only rocket you lost?
Pardon?
Was that the only rocket you lost?
Oh, no. We lost the next two, as a matter of fact. The scientist took him home on the weekend to work on him, and his dog buried him. Kind of out of luck there. We were real disappointed.
Could we get into manned space flights? What did you feel like, for example, getting into the rocket for the first time?
Well, you mean getting on the rocket.
You mean you get on the rocket?
Yeah.
It must have been kind of difficult, getting on the rocket.
Oh, you know it. Boy, I'm telling you, those first couple launchings were murder. Then they finally filed those points off, see? You should have seen that old lady with the pot roast go up.
Have you had any successful launchings?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I was a participant in the first successful launching as far as speed was concerned.
Speed.
We went 17,000 miles an hour.
That's fabulous. How far did it go?
Well, unfortunately, we did lose out in the distance. It only went 38 feet.
17,000 miles an hour and only 38 feet?
Yeah, I barely had time to say, gee, what a nice view. And then we hit the laundromat. Boy, they could have given me a ticket, but they just gave me a warning.
Has this venture brought you any popularity?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, since we came here to the States, five of the astronauts and myself have participated in some commercials, so we've made a little extra money. All of us took the PEST test.
Well, tell me, just out of curiosity, after you did take the PEST test, did you have fewer cavities?
Well, I don't know about that, but four of us had to go to the hospital. Our arms stuck to our sides.
I don't understand. With PEST as a toothpaste.
Yeah, well, they should have told us that. We thought it was a deodorant.
Well, thanks for being with us, and good luck in your race for space.
Well, gee, don't thank me. Thank Tony's Meat Market. He's the one who's sponsoring us.
There is no sport that requires more precise timing or physical alertness than the dangerous sport of bullfighting. And this is one of the sport's most skillful champions, Dag Herford. Mr. Herford, you'll be entering the ring any minute now.
Oh, really? Oh.
That's right, it's Saturday.
Is it Saturday already? Week really ties when you're having a good fly, doesn't it?
Are you actually going to go into the ring in that condition?
Oh, I hope so.
I guess, after all, it's not easy to get into that ring.
Oh, you know it. I got 40 steps to go up, man. You get that adobe all over your knees and everything. People spitting on them steps.
It certainly must be pretty frightening to see a bull come charging at you.
Well, you can imagine how I feel when I see two of them.
Two?
Yes. On a hot day, I see four.
You know, I notice when you're in the ring, you make a lot of exaggerated moves with your cape. Is that for show?
Oh, no, that's to keep the fruit flies off. You get them bulls out there week after week, you know.
How many passes have you made at a bull?
Oh, I've made a few, but it's kind of silly, you know. So you get a date with one. Where are you going to take it?
You know, I can't help thinking that you're actually just a little heavy to be a bullfighter. How much do you weigh?
Well, I weigh 165 pounds, and 10 pounds would be 175.
What's the 10?
Well, the horn weighs 10 pounds.
The horn?
Yeah, I got gored by a bull once. They operated on me, and they just left the horn right in there. So I weigh 175. Before they cut that bull off, I weighed almost a ton.
How many ears do you have?
Two. How many do you have?
No, I mean, were you ever awarded any ears?
No, I wasn't. I got a hoof once.
Oh, good. Could we see it?
I don't think so. I've been letting my hair grow away.
Do you have any particular tricks that you do with your cape?
Well, yeah, I have one I tried out in Tijuana. I just take the cape and I wrap it all around me, and then I turn my back on the bull.
Where do you go from there?
Into the fifth row.
Dag, I hear the crowd yelling for you, so I guess you'll have to be going.
Yeah, I suppose they're yelling. They probably want to see blood. That's one thing I've never disappointed them.
You always bleed. I hate to say this again, but you're going into that ring drunk.
Oh, I hope so.
Since personalities in show business have tried their luck in politics, it's only a matter of time until people in politics try their luck in show business. Now, when a person in politics decides to go into show business, he'll have to have an agent. And the conversation between that person and his agent might sound something like this. Just have a seat there. I have a couple of questions for you on this form. First of all, what is your present occupation?
I'm a king.
King. Mm-hmm. And that's the third one I've handled.
Yeah, no. Incidentally, would like to thank you for what you've done for my brother.
Mm-hmm.
He's never worked with chimps before.
Oh, good. Do you have a family?
Yes, I have a queen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you object to doing commercials?
No,
huh?
No, not at all. No, I don't do commercials.
Just give me a little idea, will you, of what your day's like?
Well,
run it down for me.
Get up in the morning and I put on an embroidered silk blouse,
mm-hmm.
and then I put on a velvet vest,
mm-hmm.
and then I put on a heavy woolen jacket, kind
yep.
of, and then I put on my big cloak, and then I mm-hmm. just kind of sit around all day.
Yeah, that's deodorant ads. Yeah. Do you have any pictures of yourself, any glossies? Or...
Well, I just had this one picture of myself. It's on a 5-pound note.
Oh.
It's our basic money over there.
Oh, you got yourself a nose job.
No. That's a family crest. I'm right below the elephant.
Do you, you do a single?
Yes, I do. I do a stand-up at launchings.
Yeah. Could I see a little of that act?
Well, what I do is I face the ship and mm-hmm. spread my hands and I say, bless you.
Is that your own material?
Yes, yeah, that's it. Oh.
I tell you, man, I'll be honest with you. We're up to our, with kings.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Tell you what, let me make just this one call here, will you? Yeah, give me the tink petty way, will you? Your wife up there with you?
Just on the balcony.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, listen, we got ourselves another king here. Yeah. Well, I thought you could get him someplace in the club, you know, just, you know, same stuff, does a launching dedication, declares war, you know, standard king, right? Yeah. No, man, I don't think he's cut out for that. Yeah, no. Well, next time, all right. Abe, thanks, man.
Yeah. Did he have anything?
Well, he got a little something, but it actually isn't your kind of thing. It's a topless joint.
Wait a minute. I mean, you know, I understand that I'm just starting out and everything.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not particular, so I...
Yeah, well, it's not that, actually.
Oh, well, what is it?
Well, you got to be at least a 32C, man.
Oh.
Horse racing is considered one of our most exciting sports. Of course, the fellas that make it exciting are the jockeys, actually. One of the country's leading jockeys is Dag Herford, and we're going to talk to him before he gets the call to the post for the final race here at Ascot today. Dag, I was kind of hoping that you'd be wearing your silks or your racing outfit.
Well, this is my racing outfit.
You wear just a coat and pants like that?
Well, just when I have a horse in the last race that I'm riding, you see, by the time I get in, the locker room's closed. I used to wear my silks home, but, you know, you stop for a beer along the way. You know how guys are, it gets kind of sticky. I don't dance that well unless I can lead.
How did you learn how to ride?
Well, it was pretty tough at first when I started to ride. As a matter of fact, they had to tie me on the horse when I first started. You
know? Oh, really?
Yeah, then one day they made the mistake of tying one leg to the starting gate and the other one to the horse. Mm. I'll tell you, when those gates blew open, forget it.
Yeah. Well, what did you do?
Well, I yelled whoa a lot. Yeah. Only louder. And higher. Woo!
You know, I noticed that you'd never use a whip.
Oh, no, no. I used to, but not anymore. No, sir. You hit those horses, they go like the wind.
Yeah, I imagine it's pretty dangerous on the turns when those horses bunch up there and going that fast.
Yes, yes. I understand it is. Now, I never get involved in that.
Well, what do you do to avoid that?
Well, I go way on the outside. There's nobody out there, you know. So. It's a lot longer, but when you consider the safety element, I think it's worth it. Yeah.
Did you ever ride in a fixed race?
Oh, I'm kind of ashamed to admit it, but yes, I did. As a matter of fact, I was in one race. The trainer gave me a pill, and he told me to use it at the starting gate.
Mm-hmm. How did it come out?
Well, the horse lost, but right after the race, I ran to Detroit in 2.5 hours.
Have you ever won a race?
Yes, as a matter of fact, my horse won the Kentucky Derby last year. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've fallen off the starting gate. Yeah. But I got to see him come across. It was quite a thrill. It's a lot of booing and hissing, though. I didn't...
I suppose you're just about to get ready for the race now, huh?
Yeah, I'll have to go down and meet the horse that I'm going to ride.
Meet him?
Oh, yeah, sure, sure. We have to meet him, yeah. I mean, after all, how would you feel if somebody jumped on your back without introducing himself?
The government has recently clamped down on TV commercials advertising cigarettes because they were appealing too much to youngsters. Well, this presented a problem to the agencies, but they got around it by using the very same scripts, only they let older people do them. And here's what one of those TV commercials sounds like now.
Hi, I'm Don Rumba. Speaking to you on behalf of Lucky Stroke Cigarettes. I'm 89 years old, but I still have fun at beach parties. Thanks to Lucky Strokes. Not that the flavor's so great, but I find if I don't eat before I smoke, I can get a little high. Oh, that's good. What I like about Lucky Stroke is that there's no filter to trap the flavor or interfere with the taste. Of course, denture stains or something else. But they do make you feel young. Just the other day, I said to my girl, Mrs. Stroud. She's a widow. I said, why don't we go skydiving? I thought it might take her mind off her late husband, who was killed during the war. Cheyenne got him. We rented a couple of chutes and went up. I wanted her to have a good time, so before she started her free fall, I lit up a lucky stroke for her. She smoked it all the way down. I mean, all the way. Roman candle, man. Blotto. I guess she hadn't eaten in a while. Kind of made her a little lightheaded. Not light enough. I identified her by her heart supports. Might not be like millions of others who found the fun of lighting up a lucky stroke before you eat. Remember, LSMCD. Lucky stroke means a cheap drunk.
You know, in college football, if a head coach doesn't come up with a winning team, he's in a lot of trouble. Tonight we're going to be talking to a coach who is having quite a little bit of trouble with not only the alumni, but his players. And let's go into the locker room now, and we'll meet Coach Dag Herford. Coach Herford.
Now, wait a minute. Look, we've had a lot of injuries this year, and I mean, you can't really blame the whole thing on me.
No, Coach. Coach.
Not what?
No, I just wanted to talk to you.
Oh. You're from the alumni?
No, no.
Well, I can't be too sure, man. I'm going there.
I understand that since you've been coaching here, you've lost 18 games in a row.
Oh, wait a minute. That's a rumor.
No, man. That's what it says in the official scorebook. 18 games lost while you were the coach.
Oh, well, then it's not a rumor. Boy, I was wishing it'd be a rumor. You know, that'd be good.
Yeah. If a coach loses 18 games in a row, I imagine he stands a pretty good chance of being fired.
Well, I bet he does.
Don't you have any outstanding players that could pull you through, maybe get you a winning game?
Well, we got, one player. This kid McIntyre is a pretty good player.
Yeah.
He takes the ball and he runs with it and he kicks it and he passes it.
Really great, huh?
No, it's just that it's his ball. Can't get it away from him. You know,
yeah.
The only one we have, too.
Yeah. I guess it's been a pretty rough season for you.
You're not kidding. We don't even have a band this year. All we got is a five-piece combo.
Well, you know, it's the spirit that counts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that band's out there trying to spell out welcome alums. All we got is W-E and part of an L.
You know, maybe we could find out what's wrong, you know? Like, the folks might be interested to see how you handle your team out there in action. Now, suppose your team is on the one-yard line, right?
Yeah.
Now, you're losing by just one touchdown. 10 seconds to go, one-yard line. What do you do?
Oh, boy. Yeah. 1 yard. Oh, well, I'm doing it.
Well, you're just staring. What is that?
Well, I've never seen him play this good. Well, on the one-yard line.
No, here. Great. Let me tell you. You need a timeout, so blow your whistle.
Oh, I can't do that.
Why?
Well, I lost that little ball out of my whistle. I can't do it. Sounds like blowing air through that thing.
Well, no, do something. You yell at the ref to stop it.
Hey, ref, can you find that little ball that's in my whistle?
No, you yell timeout, like, timeout,
oh.
Right? Oh, you halt the play.
Yeah.
Now what do you do?
Well, I go into the huddle there, and I tell them that you got to play for him.
Yeah, well, why me?
Well, you're the guy who yelled timeout.
No, look, you're on the field.
Right.
You're with the team.
Right.
Now, who's the captain?
Wilson.
Okay. You tell Wilson your best play.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
You got a dime?
Do I? Well,
I got to call Wilson.
Well, where's Wilson?
Well, he's home.
Oh, what's he doing home?
He broke his leg in the second game. He's going to show up.
Look, tell the team
to
run play T-48, right?
Right.
Okay, now they score.
Right.
And you win by a point,
oh,
right? The game's over.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, boy, that's something, isn't it?
Huh? Yep.
Yeah. I get carried off the field, and I'm in the locker room, and all the guys yell and cheer and everything.
Great.
And I call up my wife and tell her we won a game.
Great.
Then you know what I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to go back on the field.
Relive the glory, huh?
No, I'm going to look for that little ball in my whistle.
This is National Friendship Week, and tonight we're going to talk to a man who is a perfect example of what this symbolizes. We're going to talk to the Lone Ranger who befriended his faithful companion, Tonto. How did you first meet Tonto?
Well, I had been shot, and Tonto found me, and he nursed me back to health.
I think that's a perfect example of friendship.
I don't know. I think it's the least he could do. He was the one who shot me.
Well, why did he shoot you?
Well, I saw him in a pass, and he had his broken bow there, and he said to me, "Nokola, tanto nemiwa," which I thought meant, "I give you my broken bow, you give me your gun, and we be friends."
Is that what it means?
No, it means, "I give you my broken bow, you give me your gun, and I'll shoot you."
But didn't you actually become the best of friends later in life?
Well, not really. As a matter of fact, he practically ruined my life.
How?
Well, he was always making me these stupid good luck necklaces and bracelets. Yeah. Made me wear them all the time wherever we went.
Well, why would that ruin your life?
Well, for years I thought I was the masked woman.
Couldn't you explain that to them, that
sure
you weren't?
I could, but who's going to believe a guy wearing all that jewelry?
Did Tonto teach you the ways of the Indian?
Yeah, he taught me one little trick. He taught me how to jump from my horse onto a speeding stagecoach.
Well, that certainly proved his friendship.
Oh, I don't know. He told me to jump from my horse and hang onto the wheel.
Didn't get it. Did he try to make up for it?
Oh, yeah, he tried to make up for it. Yeah, he made me a diamond brooch. Good luck brooch, you know. But I was kind of mad about it. I wanted a pair of spurs.
You weren't happy, huh?
No, I mean, it looked kind of silly traveling at the speed of light, going high old silver and hitting your horse with a brooch.
I notice you're not wearing a mask.
Yeah, well, I don't anymore. That was another stupid idea of Tano's. Yeah. I kept running into trees and falling off cliffs.
Why'd you do that?
Well, I never put any eye holes in it.
I'm sorry. I guess, actually, we were mistaken. You actually weren't too fond of Tonto then.
Wait a minute. He's my best friend and partner, and I hope he continues to make those good luck necklaces and bracelets.
I don't understand.
Oh, I got a gift shop in Nevada.
The hippies and the hippie movement have been very much in the news lately, and so tonight we thought it might be interesting to talk to a member of this movement, and we'd like you to meet him now. Good evening, sir. What is your name?
Dag Hereford.
Mm-hmm. And you're a hippie.
Okay.
No, I mean, I was expecting to see someone in, you know, the long hair and the way out clothes and sort of thing.
Well, my wife and I have just been hippies for 2 weeks, so we haven't had a chance to let our clothes rot yet.
Oh. You know, I understand letting your clothes get dirty is part of being a hippie.
Oh, sure, right? Sure, that's right. As a matter of fact, we're going to a hippie formal next Saturday, so my wife's trying to get her dress ready.
Yeah, what's she doing?
She's letting the dog sleep on it. I hope it'll be done.
How did you and your wife become hippies?
Well, all you do is go to a meeting and put something in the pot.
And what you put in the pot?
Pot.
Well, whatever made you want to join, anyway, in the first place?
Well, we like to play a lot of games, the wife and I, and we like to travel, and they said they'd be taking a lot of trips.
Yeah. Have you taken any trips?
Well, just one. We went down to Mexico.
Yeah. Did you take LSD?
No, we drove. My wife wanted to stop and see her sister.
You see, no, you don't follow me. All you have to do to take a trip is to take a pill, and you're there.
No kidding. Gee, that'd be a lot better than the way we went. Yeah. I lost 2 days' work, my car boiled over.
I was wondering, how do you learn all those hippie customs, the things they do?
Oh, well, you have to go to classes for that.
Yeah. What classes do you take?
Well, I took cooking, music, and riots.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn in cooking?
Well, we learned how to smoke bananas.
Yeah? Well, how do you do that?
Well, you preheat your oven to 350, and you put your peels on an ungreased cookie sheet, and you just put them in there, and eventually they smoke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what about music?
Oh, yeah. Well, now, most of those guys listen to psychedelic records, but I just play the harp instead.
You know, that might be interesting. Could you play it for us?
Well, no, I can't now. See, I left my harp in San Francisco.
Our loss. Listen, you mentioned riots, too. Do you, the police give you guys a pretty rough time?
Well, they sure have. As a matter of fact, I got a neighbor that got arrested last week just for wearing a miniskirt in the supermarket.
Yeah, what'd the police do?
Well, they arrested him, took away his skirt. Find him. They left him standing out on the sidewalk with just a blouse and his fishnet stockings.
Hard to catch a cab that way. You know, I heard they had a riot last night. Were you there?
Well, I'd like to have been, but I didn't get a chance to make it. I had rotary.
Well, it's been nice talking to you. And before we go, I thought we might get a chance to talk to your wife. See?
Well, yeah, you could have, but she flipped out.
Oh, a little wiggy on the drugs and things?
No, she flipped out.
I don't understand that.
Well, she was riding in the sidecar of my motorcycle, and I made a hard ride, and she flipped out.
Yeah.
She bent my training wheel and everything. Peace and love.
Peace and love?
Yeah, that's where she fell out down the corner. Peace and love.
Flying is no longer a luxury. Actually, it's a necessity in this country, and it's also a multi-million dollar business. However, major airlines have made it very difficult for smaller airlines to survive. And today, we're going to be talking to a man who is faced with just such a problem. He is Dag Herford. He's president of Lars Airlines. Mr. Herford, I guess we could say that you have one of these smaller airlines.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. How many planes do you have?
We have none.
You have none? Well, what effect does that have on your business?
Well, it's kept maintenance costs way down.
I don't understand. You still sell tickets.
Oh, yes, yeah, we still sell tickets. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, what do the people say when they show up and then they find out you don't have any airlines?
Well, they just say, hey, you don't have any airplanes. You get a lot of that.
Yeah. Do they get mad?
Oh, yeah, they get real mad, yeah.
Well, I certainly can't say as I blame them.
Well, me either. You know, there's no refund on those tickets.
Well, what do they do?
Well, a lot of them just go out on the runway with their luggage and they sit there so no planes can land. We're kind of glad we don't have any because, boy, there's always somebody out there. It's a mess.
Did you ever have any planes?
Yeah, we had a plane about 3 years ago. We had one, yeah.
Well, what happened to it?
Well, Mr. Lars, the president of the airlines, was also the pilot, and he was about 82, so we had to ground him.
Oh, he doesn't fly anymore?
Well, just Cleveland, Pittsburgh.
Cleveland, Pittsburgh? I thought you said you grounded him.
Well, we did. He just taxis all the way. He had a toll gate last week.
You know, I imagine it's hard to compete with the major airlines, what with the entertainment they provide and that sort of thing.
Yes, that's true. That's true. We tried it for a while, but it just didn't work out at all.
Oh, you provided movies, TV, stereo?
No. We had high school plays. they tried to do Brigadoon one time. We couldn't get the plane off the ground. The third tune.
Yeah.
Couldn't
make it. How many types of service do you offer the
passengers?
Well,
we have two types of service, too.
Oh, first and second class?
No, we have in or out.
Out?
Yeah, we set up seats on the wing outside.
So that must be uncomfortable.
Yeah, they're just folding chairs. she was 82. She was getting up in her years, you know. So.
Yeah.
But actually, it's quite a sight to see her on takeoff, see her silver hair and her smile up and down the aisle.
Oh, she'd go up and down the aisles, comforting the passengers on takeoff. And
no,
sort of.
She was still up front, but her hair and her teeth had come down. Oh. The initial thrust, you know, right back there. Kind of a junk pile back there. By the
Where is Mrs. Lars now?
Well, she's somewhere in Memphis.
Somewhere in Memphis? Yeah. I don't understand.
Well, you see, she was serving meals one day, and she accidentally backed out the exit, so she's somewhere in Memphis.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's certainly been nice talking to you, Mr. Herford.
Oh, excuse me, I have a call coming.
Okay.
Hello? Yep. Oh, you did? Oh, fine. Yeah. Gee, that's good news. Yeah, we'll be down together. Right. Thank you. Oh, good.
What was that?
Paul, I just found Mrs. Lars, so we're going to be down and pick her up.
Oh, good news. Where was she?
She was in Memphis, Little Rock, Greensboro, Orlando, and a little bit of Philadelphia.
fast-moving sport of soccer made its debut in this country just recently, and we'd like to get the players' view of how they think soccer is going over in this country. Tonight, we're going to talk to Dag Hereford, the star of the new Polish team, the Kielbasis. Dag, how do you think soccer is doing in this country?
Bomb.
How would you say that in English?
Bomb.
Bomb?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you mean.
Yeah.
How about the salary? How has that been this year?
It's a bomb.
Oh, that's a bomb, too?
No. The game a bomb, the salary a bomb.
How the crowds been?
The bomb.
What's that, bomb or bum?
No, we missed the ball, that boom.
Yeah, where did your team end up?
Bomb.
Bomb?
The goulash first, the kabasi bomb.
I see. What will you do during the off season?
Barum.
Barum?
Yeah, I go to Nick's barum, shoot the shovel board.
Okay. Before you leave, could you give us your opinion of America?
Barum.
What was that?
Cabbage. You have that 3 times a day.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to seeing you out there in that field again next season.
Huh? More cabbage.
Oh.
Barum.
Oh, more cabbage?
No, I had to go to the barum.
As you know, the results of this recent presidential election are final, and this marks a moment in history, for today is the first time in history a third party has succeeded in being elected president. Now I'd like you to meet the new president of the United States. Mr. President, how do you feel about the election?
This happy day for all Apache.
As you know, you are the first Indian to be elected to the office of president.
Ah, that's right. Geronimo III, proud to be new chief of country.
Oh, our country's chief. That's good. That's my kind of humor. Do you plan many changes in government?
Yes, we do. We plan to take back all land once Indians.
Isn't that actually most of the country?
That's my kind of humor.
Will you be doing anything to bring the Indian and the white man back together?
First thing we have is another Thanksgiving feast.
That sounds like a perfect way to reestablish relations.
I'm not too sure of that, though. This time, Indian bring table, white man bring food.
Well, the way I understood it, though, the white man traded you goods for whatever he took from you.
That's true. 1 year, he take all our corn, give us material for clothes. Uh-huh.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, that year, he eat cornbread in wintertime.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We eat little cotton dress. You know how long you have boiled skirt make tender? And I tell you, ruffle, not best part.
Well, look, now that's all part of the past. Now, we're concerned with the future. What about big business?
Big business, easy. We take all big businessmen, take away all money, give them beads, multicolored feathers, shiny mirror.
Yeah, well, that's not fair.
That's what we thought.
Well, what about war?
War. We end all war. Take away all weapons. Give everybody acre land in Arizona.
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
That's what we thought. Also, in school, go and tell truth about Custer.
Well, what's to tell about Custer?
Oh, come on now, man, huh?
What?
I mean, you take one white man to wear a blue suit, little yellow piping downside, little yellow scarf. You're not that dumb, white man. All those guys run around and stand up in the saddle and say, oh. You'll not find that in Indian camp.
It still sounds to me as though you're bitter. Don't you really know that time heals all wounds.
Ah, that true. That what great-grandfather Geronimo say when he look at wound from musket. He say, in time, that heal.
Well, you're still not doing anything for the country.
Ah, well, we going to do one thing. Make the whole country happy. We take everybody here, send them back to country where they came from.
Well, who are you going to start with?
Us.
Yeah, well, what does that solve?
Well, that solve our problem.
Yeah, but what about us?
That's your problem.